Hey, everybody. Before I get to the show today, I wanted to mention that I have a new sponsor for this show, canineservices.com. It's owned by Kevin Sheldahl. If you listened to a couple of podcasts ago, I had Kevin on my show. And Kevin has decades of actual handling experience as a police officer. And he's also had his company for many, many years. And through his company, Canine Services LLC, he provides basic and advanced canine training. I mean, he's got all kinds of courses down there and everything you can think of, patrol detection, explosives, and even human remains. He does workshops, he does seminars all over the place. And Kevin is just a wealth of knowledge and a very humble guy. So he's fun to be around and will give everything he has to make your team the very best. So check him out at canineservices.com. So it's k-9services.com, or give him a call at 505-250-4576. And also, I wanted to mention the Colorado Canine Conference that's coming up the end of July. I've been talking about it. My next guest that I have today is one of the instructors, Howard Young. So he'll be teaching at the Colorado Canine Conference. I have a lot of great instructors coming. People are starting to register. We still have spots available. But if you're going to register, you know, get on it, because I have a feeling we'll have to cap our registration at some point. So right now, we're good. I'll keep you posted if it starts getting real tight. I know it takes a little while for people to put in for it and get approval, and especially if you got to travel. So check out the ColoradoK9Conference.com page, all the information with all the instructors. And then today you'll hear I have Howard Young coming on here, one of our instructors. That'd be fun just to have a conversation with Howard. A lot of people see him on social media, but don't really know Howard that. So I just thought it'd be fun to have a little conversation with Howard. So sit back and I hope you enjoy the show.
This is the Police Canine Training Podcast with Jeff Meyer. Join us for each episode to get real-world advice from canine professionals who have experience on the street. Each episode will focus on up-to-date information that you can use on the street. Spend about 30 minutes with us each week as part of your training day. Our goal at Police Canine Training is to make every canine team be the best they can be.
Welcome to the Police Canine Training Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Meyer. Today, I have one of the instructors that's going to be here for the Colorado Canine Conference. I have Howard Young on with me today. And I don't know, maybe 2 months ago or so, I was on Howard's podcast, if you want to check that out. We had a good time kind of talking about my background. But, you know, a lot of people like myself, you know, we see Howard out on social media and he's doing a lot of training and stuff. But I don't know everything about Howard, just kind of how he ended up getting to be a dog trainer and all those things. So we're going to talk to him today about some of his background, how he got where he is. And then we're going to talk a little bit about what he's going to be teaching here in Colorado at the Colorado Canine Conference. So with that, how are you doing today, Howard?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm glad we finally connected. We kind of have been playing phone tag and stuff on, but here we are. So can you, you know, for the people who maybe haven't heard your podcast, you know, we'll talk about that and where to find you on social media and all those things. And then, you know, talk about your background a little bit. So.
Sure. I'd say my beginnings are rather unusual from the standpoint that I wasn't in law enforcement when I started this. And to be honest, I was way out of my depth, but it was just kind of one of those right place, right time for me situations.
Yeah.
But when I graduated from college, I was really into working. I was intrigued by working dogs. I wouldn't say I was even into them because I didn't even know about them for the most part. We had German Shepherds growing up, and interestingly enough, we did have one that ended up going to become a New Jersey State police dog.
Yeah.
It was given to us by some folks that we knew, German friends of ours in Virginia. It ended up being really more dog than we could even
teach. Yeah.
So we reached out to some folks and they came and evaluated and took him. And that was kind of my intro, yeah. I guess. And
so were you training those dogs at home, or were they just family pets?
Just basic obedience.
Yeah.
It's funny. I remember, this is my dad's type A personality. I was 16 years old, didn't have my license for very long. And he was putting that dog through an obedience course, which was your basic Keeler method.
Yeah.
Had prong collar. And my dad was out of town and he didn't want the dog to miss. So he sent me in his stead. And it was probably the worst possible experience you could have. He was big and strong and dog aggressive. And there was It's just a bad experience. But I think that it gave me, it maybe planted a seed, I guess.
Yeah.
It's, when I graduated from college, I wanted to get a Rottweiler. And I don't know why a Rottweiler. I just thought they were cool looking.
Yeah.
Big, strong, sturdy dogs. And at that point, there were really weren't very many to be found. It was really before the big craze.
Yeah.
So the cool part about that was, I said you could find some that still had a lot of good working
qualities
without having to go, you know, far and wide. So I had some good ones to start with, but I did the basic obedience myself, and I kind of learned through really reading and actually had a trainer in our area who trained a dog for me, and I learned a lot from that experience. And from there, I actually wanted to do some protection work with it. So I connected with a gentleman who was in a neighboring county who trained protection dogs and police dogs. And at that, he had just lost his decoy. And I was young and athletic enough and fit enough. And I it would amounted to an informal apprenticeship for probably 2 years, where I basically would go about three times a week and work with he and his dogs, and learned a tremendous amount. And he turned me on to the sport of Schutzen. And I felt like, you know, that was a really cool, you know, base of knowledge as well. Cause, you know, here are these people that are committing all this time and energy and money to something, and they're so incredibly passionate about it. So it was a great experience. What ended up happening is that it got the attention of some of the local police officers, and they started bringing their dogs by because they had some issues with engagement, biting mechanics, overall control. Some of it was due to the fact that they just didn't have very good dogs. They were getting a lot of donated dogs, and they just weren't all that good. But it opened doors for me. So essentially, there was a new chief in town, and he was looking to make some changes, and he asked me to evaluate the four teams they had, and basically I set up some scenarios that I felt like were fair to them.
Yeah.
And there were two teams that were just really lacking. And in my recommendation, and I typed it all up for him, four pages of documents, and I don't know that he was expecting that. So he called me in his office about 2 weeks after and offered me a job. And I said, well, I was working as a mental health professional at the time. Said, I have a job. I appreciate your wanting to hire me. That's great. But he said, no, we'll work around your schedule. So I am beginning this is my 30th year with that agency.
Wow. Wow.
So when I say I was out of my depth, I was out of my depth. There's no getting around that.
Yeah.
And to this day, there are certain things that you will not see Howard Young teach. You're not going to find me teaching tactics. It's just, not that I haven't learned things about it, but it's, I just don't feel like that's my lane, and I need to stay out.
Sure.
So, but in terms of procurement of dogs and selection of handlers, I mean, I've been very much, that's been what I've done for the last 30 years. We've picked up some agencies along the way and have our local sheriff's office in that group as well. And I retired as an educator about 2.5 years ago. So, with the sole purpose of doing more dog related things.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're doing a lot of traveling, putting on some decoy schools, detection schools.
So for the first 25 years or so, you were doing this, you know, in the evening around your other jobs and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was at night.
Yeah.
Some long, long days.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's funny that we would train from 6 in the evening till 10 at night, which were 4 hour blocks.
Yeah.
Which worked well for us because we were very small groups.
Yeah.
Maximum size would be, you know, four.
Yeah.
Four teams. And a lot of times it would be two. So we would get a lot accomplished in those 4 hours. And of course, we're not taking any meal breaks or.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was relatively uninterrupted unless, you know, something serious went on and they needed to be called into work. And that was the cool part too, is that if there was something that needed to be done, we could break free and go take care of it.
Yeah.
And that's true to this day.
Yeah. And so when you first started, did they give you kind of, you know, almost like carte blanche? Like, did they tell
they
you?
They really did.
You want to get new dogs?
Bizarre.
Yeah.
They gave me some resources in terms of, I visited another department that the chief kind of felt like was, he felt like was a good model for me to look
yeah.
at. So, and it was very helpful in terms of seeing what was out there. And then I went to a couple big seminars. I went to a NAPWATA seminar in National Seminar in Frederick, Maryland in 96.
Yeah.
And that's where I met Franco Angelini.
Yeah.
And those seeds were vital to my sure. development. A guy like that who took an interest in me, and you know, it's just been phenomenal for
yeah.
me. Somebody that will speak up for you
yeah.
in
yeah.
situations like that. And because I will say, I wasn't necessarily greeted with open arms.
Well, that was going to be my next question. What was the feeling at the agency, you know, to have a non-sworn person come in and start revamping things?
There was never any question. You know, sometimes when early on, when I would go out of town, there would be occasional eyebrows yeah. raised. Like, and I, you know, for the most part, I just kind of brushed that off.
Sure, sure.
I didn't want that to get in my way, but I guess, you know, I didn't feel like it was as big a concern as
yeah.
maybe some folks might feel like it was. And again, I wasn't pretending to be something that I wasn't.
Well, yeah, I think once they got to know you, I'm sure that any concern they had would dissipate, seeing that, like, you know, your own words, you stayed in your lane.
Sure. And now that I'm an old man doing this, I don't get any questions yeah. at all.
yeah. One of the advantages of getting old, I guess.
exactly.
So at first, did you have to go and buy some new dogs?
Yes, that was, we started, this chief recognized the need to begin to buy dogs. And obviously the quality was much different.
Yeah.
And it's really strange. So initially they weren't interested in detection at all, which was really kind of strange.
Because yeah.
in this community, I look back and detection, mainly narcotic detection, is our bread and butter.
Sure.
Now, and there are, the guys are finding dope on in vehicles and throughout their job every night.
So yeah.
when I look back and thinking that it was just kind of short-sighted on their part, but once we did put some detection dogs, we can't imagine.
Yeah, it's funny when people don't know the capabilities, and, you know, kind of like here in our area with, you know, gun and shell casing detection, I think that'll always be around now once people are exposed to how good it could be.
Right.
So did you have trouble finding good dogs then?
No, I actually, there was a gentleman that was fairly local gentleman that was going and getting some nice dogs. And I'd say I've probably in my course of working with these agencies, I've probably used about a half a dozen vendors.
Yeah.
My last six dogs I have been buying directly from Germany from a gentleman
that yeah.
I've gotten to know. And I basically talked to him for about a year and a half before I felt comfortable enough to go ahead and make a purchase.
Yes. Yeah.
I felt like the communication part was really important. I wanted him to know what I was looking for. I wanted him to know who I knew.
Yeah.
And so there are some folks that were getting dogs from him that I know, and he knows that we're friends.
Yeah.
So just trying to put, you know, all the protections in place.
And that's important. It's a dirty business. So
it is a dirty business. But I will say this about the vendors that I've done business with. Each move was not a move out of feeling disappointment
sure.
necessarily.
Yeah.
It was maybe trying something a little bit different.
Yeah.
And I say this, that I feel like I could go back to any one of those vendors today
yeah.
if I really needed yeah. to. So there weren't any bridges burned. I just, you know, yeah. chose a different direction at that time.
Yeah, and I think both of you, you know, I think it's healthy to maybe shop around a little bit. I think, you know, both you and I have seen times where maybe an agency stays with one vendor just too long, you know, and either they get too comfortable, or they're, you know, the vendor isn't, you know, doing some of the new stuff that people are or whatever, but it's always healthy to at least shop around and compare and make sure that you're, you know, getting the latest types of dogs, because dogs have changed quite a bit over just the last, I mean, definitely over 30 years, but I would say, I don't know if I put a number on it, it seems like maybe the last 15 years, I think the dogs, in my opinion, have changed quite a bit. I don't know about how you
feel. Yeah. No, I would definitely agree with that. I mean, and I think my selection has changed as
absolutely.
Well.
That's a good point. Good point.
The dogs, I think that when I was first getting started, we were primarily German Shepherds, and I would label them today probably a medium drive shepherd.
Yeah.
Not necessarily high drive as compared to some of the, you know, the males that we're seeing. And I felt like maybe we got away with some things that we wouldn't get away with today.
Yeah.
In terms of our training.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that with the younger high energy dogs, we've, you know, my background was heavy compulsion. And there's so that I have to guard against that even today.
Yeah.
I feel like I have to remind myself, you know, there's probably a better way to do this. You know, you don't always want to reach for a bigger hammer.
Yeah, exactly.
It'd be really nice to get this dog to want to.
Well, and that's probably one of the great things about the Mals getting very popular. And then, in my opinion, especially the Dutchies, because, you know, most of the Dutchies that I've trained have that hardness to them that compulsion is not going to work. So you have to be a better trainer when you start dealing with those types of dogs.
I agree wholeheartedly. I have one at home. He's definitely that way.
Yeah.
If you decide you want to, you know, be hard, heavy-handed, he's going to remind you.
Yeah.
That's not a good choice.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, if there's battle of wills, a lot of times they're going to win that battle. So you going back, you know, you get your first set of dogs, and I mean, there had to be some pressure on you. You're going out and buying dogs and as a new job and stuff. And then did you get new handlers, or did you give those new dogs to the existing handlers?
The original group stayed in there pretty good. Then there was some transition. One of the things that just became a reality about that particular agency is that it's relatively small. There were always four teams, but it seemed like there was a 3-year period that was, if I could keep a guy on for 3 years without losing him to another facet, then things were good. But
that's a short period of time.
Is a very short period of time, because I firmly believe that a lot of guys don't come into their own until their third year. So,
oh, exactly. Yeah.
But there were some guys that ended up staying and getting very invested. We lost a handler in 2016 to a shooting. It wasn't a dog involved shooting, but he was serving a warrant, and he was somebody that had been in for 10 years.
Yeah.
And was always made the comment that he was never going to do anything else.
Yeah.
I think that if he was still with us today, he would have succumbed to the pressure to become a lieutenant, sergeant, lieutenant.
Yeah.
But it just would have been a lieutenant by now.
Yeah. So you get those guys up and running, obviously have some success. Then you start, you introduced some detection work to them.
Yes. Yeah. And it was funny. I didn't really, my beginnings were basically, I convinced them to purchase a detection dog from Von Lick. And so my beginnings of learning to do detection work was going out there, observing the training with that dog. And I felt like we were very particular. I mean, I was measuring boxes and to deciding to, you know, come home and make these boxes and make this work.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I just kind of gleaned certain things. So I wouldn't say that even the method that I picked up was necessarily their method, but for the most part it was.
Yeah.
My understanding of it anyway.
Yeah.
And then, but that's morphed, you know, over the last couple years as well.
Yeah.
And then, we weren't using any markers at that time, or that we were aware of.
Yeah.
We were using them. We just didn't know it.
That's a good point. As everybody says, they don't use markers. Yes, you do.
There were all kinds of things we were marking. It might be Velcro on your pants. It could be anything.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. We all use markers. So then did that stay pretty much the same number of dogs and same number of handlers over most of the time you've been there?
Yes. That particular agency has always maintained four, but then we picked up the local sheriff's office and they have five.
So more than doubled your amount of work all of a sudden.
Yes. And then there's been an agency here or there. I did one stint for 2 years recently, and it was by design. It was to be 1 year to get them up and running and to be self-sufficient, and ended up being 2 years, which was fine.
Yeah. And
but those four guys were commuting an incredible distance to come here.
When you get a new dog with a new handler, when you were still working full time, Were you just training every evening with them getting up through?
We were doing just 3 nights a week, which it doesn't seem like a lot, but the retention is amazing. The other part is that because we are training in-house, essentially officers were still able to work a relatively uninterrupted schedule. So nobody was being sent out of town for a number of weeks. And the beauty of that is that they allowed me to take as much time as I needed. So we wouldn't put a number of weeks on our courses.
That's good.
It would be all based on skills acquisition. So typically what happened is that we discovered that we could have a dog up and running in detection before your typical patrols functions.
Yeah.
So we would get them up and running and get them certified, and they'd start using the dogs on the road, but they'd still be in school with me.
Yeah.
Finishing out the patrol function. Yeah. And that's pretty much the model that we've used all along.
And some people might think that sounds, three nights a week. But, if you're going to compare that to if somebody's working 4-10s, but they're in a group of 12 teams, 3 nights a week when you're doing one dog, you're getting way more done, actually.
Oh, yeah. To work one dog for 4 hours is tough.
Yeah. Yeah. You run out of dogs, patients, handlers.
You get sick of each other. For sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So it sounds like, though, that they've given you a lot of latitude, to become the expert, for their agency, which with the quick turnover, to me, it makes, a lot of sense that they've retained you there, so that you can be the one constant and their canine.
It's been a beautiful arrangement from the standpoint that I am not part of the hierarchy.
Yeah.
But yet I have a relationship with all the key people, including the chief. So.
Well, at this point, you probably remember when the chief was a rookie, probably. So.
I do.
Yeah.
I do. It's funny. We were at an event recently. It was a Citizens Police Academy, and they wanted the canines to do a portion of it. And I was looking around the room and I said, there is no one here anymore when I started.
Isn't that everybody crazy? Yeah.
No one.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how it's funny, when you start as you're a rookie cop, you see the chiefs and it's like, wow, that's a chief. And then throughout your time, it's like, oh, I kind of remember that guy. And then by the time you're ready to retire, it's like, oh, I worked with that guy and it's no longer a chief. It's by his first name, and you remember working a car with him. So it is a funny transition.
It is a funny. What's also, we just recently interviewed Jay Nix on our podcast, and it's going to come out in a couple of days. But one of the things that we talked about is investing in people. And
absolutely.
And when I look around and I realize that, this is about training dogs, but it is about so much more.
Exactly.
It's about, and now I'm kind of the age where a lot of these guys are, they're younger than my sons.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's also my duty to provide them with maybe a little wisdom and guidance.
Sure.
As it relates to basically life,
sure.
In general, and decision making, and
sure.
Getting caught up in things that are of no real consequence. This too shall pass.
Yeah.
Because they'll get wound up about something, and I'll say, you guys have no idea how many times this has come up.
Yes. Yeah. I've seen it before. And everybody survived. So when it comes to dog training, you said, like many people, you started out being much more compulsion. Yeah. Now, over the years, I think everybody is, by necessity or education or everything, our profession has gotten way, way better about how we train. What are some of the big takeaways that you have now? Like if you're training a dog, that some of the, the Howard Young things that maybe, as you're traveling around, you think, well, I wish some more people knew this trick or that trick or these ideas. Do you have some of those things from all your time doing it?
I'm not sure I quite understand the
question. Some of the things, some tricks of the trade that you've come up with.
Oh, sure.
From doing it for a while.
Yeah. I just recently did a presentation at Hold the Line conference, and it was about what we're going to talk about in Colorado at the Colorado conference. Yeah. But one of the things that's to me, that's interesting is that there are some groups, and I think I probably have been guilty of this before, of making dogs super, super resilient to anything that we're trying to accomplish, that let's say something like outing.
Yeah.
And if you do not have an effective method, if you haven't chosen something that is going to work pretty consistently with most dogs, and if it involves compulsion, what typically happens is that somebody will try something and it doesn't work. Well, it's making that dog that much better and stronger and resilient.
Yeah.
So they try something else and it's not as effective either. And then they try something else and they try something else and they try something else. And they become really, really good at making that dog learn to fight through everything.
Yeah. 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 That's a good way to, and the analogy is good. Yeah. They're getting more resilient.
So I think there are ways now. I think I've been guilty maybe of overdoing the bite work. Not that I'm saying it doesn't need to be done, but overdoing it without implementing some controls along the way.
Yep. And I think that's a great point. And I think that probably comes from some of the background. Some of the dogs, when you first had them, I remember we had to kind of get those dogs jazzed up about doing some of it.
Right.
And build up some of that drive.
You know, you feel like, well, we got to keep building. We got to keep building. We got to make that grit better. We got to make it fuller, stronger. Yeah. And then what you realize is that you've created this muscle bound dog that's just super, super tough and doesn't want to let go.
Yeah. And can't think straight anymore because he's so into the bite work.
Right. Two brain cells and they're both fighting with each other.
Yeah. So that, and you had mentioned that's some of the stuff, you know, what kind of stuff for your classroom and then for our scenarios out here, what are you going to do?
Well, I feel like one of the things that we've been pretty successful at is getting dogs prepared for real world engagement, not being equipment fixated, giving them the pictures necessary to actually engage someone without any real confusion on the street. And that's really the way I look at that is just providing them with a lot of different pictures.
Sure.
Obviously, one of those is taking a dog that is neutral in a muzzle and teaching him how to muzzle fight.
Sure.
There's no visible equipment. I mean, I think most people understand that. But also the implementation of prosthetics.
Yeah.
If it's done properly. And I think that's the key. The same situation is with the hidden sleeve. Because we're dealing with masters of association. They spot the differences very quickly.
Oh yeah.
And once the game is up as it relates to a hidden sleeve or prosthetic, it's just a piece of equipment.
Exactly.
But if we can set it up so that the dog rounds the corner and it's low light and it's presented in a way that it looks natural, then we're going to be able to pull something off that might be pretty special for them.
Yeah.
Helps bridging that gap.
I agree.
But if you're going to take that prosthetic on and just wave it around and present it like a sleeve, the dog is going to treat it like a sleeve.
Yep. Yeah.
I can say that when we've done it properly, I feel for some dogs, you can actually sense the difference that they, when they bite it, they go, oh, this is different. This is not our typical game.
That's been my experience. When they bite that prosthetic the first time, It's very much like where I've seen a dog on their first street bite. A lot of times they'll bite it once and then kind of half-ass let go and then rebite. Like this doesn't seem right, but it's fun.
And right.
So you can use that moment, you know, to kind of encourage the dog and show them that, like you say, that picture. But, you know, what if you were training with somebody and they told you they use the prosthetic, you know, every training day, I'm assuming you'd discourage that.
Oh, I would for sure. We use it very sparingly.
Yeah.
It's not something that we do very often, but every once in a while we'll throw it in.
Yeah.
Try to catch the dog off guard and find a safe way to do it. Yeah.
And then I know you'd mentioned, you know, it was part of your title, your classes, control to effective engagement. So how much control do you want to put on especially a new dog when they're hitting the street?
Well, I have an expectation that this is just me personally, and I have nothing against folks that want to physically take a dog off strong. I don't have an objection to that, but I feel like if I'm going to go through the trouble to teach a dog to out, I have an expectation.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when we when we're training, we don't typically take dogs off strong. We expect them to out. So, yeah. Of course, you know, you learn by doing that there are certain situations that get created going to be more difficult for a dog to want to out.
Yeah, yeah.
Same reason with any dog that's super, super possessive of a toy. Like, yeah. they can figure out the two-ball game pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But if they've had to hunt and work for that toy and then they get it, and now you're going to walk them back to the car and then take it from them, that's for some dogs, that's a little different.
Yeah.
I worked for this. It's mine. I'm possessing it. And I'm not just going to give it up because I know the game's over.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we do have an expectation that they out. Now, there are some sorts of situations I know guys will take a dog off strong, and I don't object to that.
Yeah.
But I also, there have been situations that I know dogs have been deployed and there's no way the handler could get to them.
Exactly. Exactly.
Safely.
Yeah.
And we rely on that out.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of, I think, thought process anymore that the out's not as important. And I firmly believe it's a critical skill. But I guess when I'm asked about control too, is you're not putting a dog out there. Like I've heard this theory, and you and I've never even talked about it, but it's never been my theory. I've heard the theory that people want dogs to be pretty dirty when they get out on the street with very little control, because then they'll most likely, you know, effectively engage a suspect, and then they put more control later after they have a few street bites. I've never bought into that theory. I'm assuming that's not something that.
I really haven't bought into that theory. There have been situations, if I'm going to be completely honest, we've had failures.
Sure, absolutely.
And I don't feel like that's talked about enough. I know that for a novice handler going through a school and they're seeing the dog bite, and they're seeing the bite equipment for the most part. Unless there's an accidental bite. And then the first time that dog fails, they're absolutely devastated.
Yep, yep.
And they shouldn't be devastated. Disappointed, yes.
Yeah.
But there should be at least an understanding that most of the time selection is right, that it's probably the fact that the dog was confused. He didn't understand what he was supposed to do.
Yeah, and I just did a podcast kind of talk about that, and I got a lot of really good feedback from people, you know, on the same thing, because, you know, there's either, you know, people that have done this for a long time, there's either guys who have had failures, or there's guys who lie and say they didn't have them, because there's not anybody who hasn't had dogs do some weird stuff, you know, at the worst possible time.
Sure. So, I think what happened, it's certainly damaging to them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then it gets out, and if the shift buys into this notion that the dog won't engage,
yep,
then they feel like they're fighting an uphill battle.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. But I think, again, you know, just that proper preparation, you know, hopefully the dog does well. And then part of my training a lot of times is that I you know, try and get them to do crisis rehearsal in their mind that what happens when the dog runs next to the guy as he's running down the street, because it could happen. You know, you just don't know till you've been there. You don't know for sure with each dog. And I've seen some dogs that eventually get to be complete man eaters that had trouble at first, you know. And I think really for the dogs that we really want on the street, I mean, I know you and I have both seen dogs over the years that, you know, you get them out of the kennel and they're ready to eat everybody. And we would, you know, you could get some control on them, but stay back, you know. And those dogs didn't have that many failures, because the first human being they find is going to get bit. But those aren't the kind of dogs that should be out on the street now. We need a lot more control and professionalism and everything else. So
I agree.
You know,
The liability aspect for
absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah.
If I can eliminate those dogs from my selection, I certainly do.
Yeah.
I would have probably at one point was guilty of maybe wanting a little bit of that in our
group. Yeah. Oh yeah. I think of some of the dogs I bought in the past, and it's like, man, I wouldn't buy that dog today, you know. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I even just recently kind of learned that a little bit, because for my detection dogs, even my bomb dogs, I like really, really high drive, busy, busy dogs that are, you know, and I have some luck, because a lot of times when I go to a kennel, people have turned down the dogs I want. And I've somehow I find a way to find some of the craziest, even labs that are just over the top drive, because that's what I want. And I recently selected a dog for an agency, and it wasn't a usual, you know, all my friends here around here said, oh, that's not a Jeff Meyer dog, because the dog was pretty dialed in. And I kind of learned something there, because for the agency and for where the dog's working and how much training they're getting, it's just a perfect dog, you know. And if there would have been a Jeff Meyer dog available there, I probably would have taken some crazy dog, and that handler would probably be having trouble now. So it's a learning game for sure, you know, always trying to figure out what you can do better. And next time I buy a detection dog, I'll probably try and middle it a little bit instead of finding the craziest dog possible. So
what's funny, I think I had this conversation with somebody recently about how nuanced things are. And I thought that he actually used the term nuanced. And I thought I think that is the perfect term, because you could give somebody a template about regarding what to do, mm-hmm. and they probably can't do it the same way. They may not be able to do it as well, but they may do it better. They may focus in on an element of it that you missed.
Yeah.
And perhaps they've spent too much time working on a particular facet. Like this whole notion of control. I feel like if you go too far in without implementing some control, you could be facing a really difficult experience.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You're going to build the dog up too much. So then we're going to do classroom stuff and then do some scenario stuff. Are you already thinking of what kind of scenario stuff you want to do when you're out here?
I am thinking of some things. Definitely some things with the prosthetic. Definitely some things with the muzzle.
Yeah.
And I know there's some other folks that I know Steve will, he's got some stuff.
Oh, absolutely. I think it'll be, and that's why I'm really looking forward to it, because I got, you know, such a wide amount of knowledge coming out here that I think, you know, I'm going to be jealous I don't have a dog to kind of go through some of these scenarios, because they're fun. They're, you know, challenging scenarios should be fun, and everybody should, you know, do well on some and maybe not quite as well and leave a little bit better than when they came. That's, you know, which should be fun about it. So,
well, I'm looking forward to it. I think it will be fun.
Yeah. And tell us a little bit more about the other stuff you got going on. You got your new company that you said you started a couple of years ago.
Yes. 2018, we started Whitebeard Canine. And so that agency that I've worked with for so long essentially resigned my position, and now I contract services. The great part is that nothing's changed.
Yeah.
The relationships are the things that are important about that.
Yeah.
It's given me a lot more freedom.
Sure.
Whereas I'm willing to go invest more in myself for additional training. Whereas before I was kind of felt like I was waiting for the agency to pay for it.
Yeah.
And now that first year, that 2018, I went to four very significant workshops that really changed a lot of my thinking. Each one of those folks were using condition reinforcers and markers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for a lot of different things, not just detection. And it really kind of opened my eyes and changed some things and created some, you know, some good working relationships with some of those people. And so, yeah, we're staying busy.
Yeah.
As busy as we want to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that. You're doing seminars. People can contact you through Whitebeard Canine and hire you to do a seminar if they want.
They certainly can. I do a lot of the decoy seminars. I bring a gentleman with me who's young and talented, and if I'm being realistic with myself, there's certain things you're not going to find me rolling around on the ground with a dog anymore. I do good just to get back up without the dog.
Sure. And then your podcast, tell us about that. I know you have one.
Working Dog Depot. I do that with a buddy of mine, Rich Harden. Rich has got a incredible resume, and it's been a dog guy for a long time. He's done lots of things with dogs, and he approached me about doing podcasts several years ago, and we made an attempt and we failed miserably because we just didn't have any clue what we were doing.
Sure.
We made a second attempt and it stuck. So we just published our 38th episode and we're into our second year.
Nice. I'll put the link to that in case people, I'm sure people already found it, but I'll put the link there and take stuff on there. How'd you and Rich meet over the years?
We used to attend a seminar in Sevierville, Tennessee every year at the same year. It was a street survival seminar, and Rich was working for Cobra Canine at the time. So he was helping with the training of the Navy SEAL program. And we just kind of struck up a friendship and remained friends. And it was funny when he called and he told me that he was starting, he wanted to do a podcast. And I said, that's great. Let me know how that turns out. And he said, no, I want to do it with you. I said, oh, okay.
I guess I will know.
Are you sure?
It's, so yeah.
It's been a good experience. As you know, it can be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a little bit of work, but I enjoy it. That's why I just started up this one after I left my last company. So it is good. So I think that's quite a bit of stuff to talk about you, and I'm looking forward to, it's about 2 months away here to the Colorado Canine Conference. Yeah. So it should be a good event. I'll put information about that in our show notes too, if you want to check it out and maybe come out. We still have spots available. So it should be fun. And I thank you for taking the time today to get on. And I think I'll probably bring you back on here real soon, and maybe we'll get into some real meat and potatoes and some real specific training ideas if you'd like to do that.
Sure. That sounds fun.
I appreciate it. All right, Harold, thank you. All right, that's going to wrap it up with our conversation with Howard Young. And I wanted to also end the show talking again about Bob Eden and cats. You've been hearing me talk about it all year. He's a supporter of this show, and I sure appreciate all the support that he's given this show. So check out catsplatinum.com. If you need record-keeping advice or you just want to kind of figure out if Cats Platinum is something for you, check out the website. He's got a free trial where you can really play with it, see how customizable it is, and just check it out. They've been doing record keeping longer than anybody. Bob kind of originated the concept, and he keeps perfecting it year in and year out. So check out catsplatinum.com. And finally, I want to thank Ray Allen again. Ray Allen's going to be our lead sponsor at the Colorado Canine Conference, and they're here in Colorado, and they're also a supporter of this show. So Ray Allen is just a quality company. They have quality products, but it's backed by quality people. And you see it when you get the products, you know they're quality. If you ever have any problem with any of the products, they will work with you. They stand behind all of their stuff. They're easy to work with. Their shipping is quick. Their products are good. So check out Ray Allen Manufacturing or rayallen.com, rayallencanine.com. I really like their products. I mentioned a lot of times that I like the muzzles that they have, one of the very best. But they have lots of good products. So check out rayallencanine.com. And I thank them for both sponsoring this show and sponsoring the Colorado Canine Conference. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a safe week.